In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Ah, yes. Let's back here for the final lobby. Monday. Alan Adams joining us for Pass the Popcorn. Hello, sir.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. You began this journey with us on the very first day of the show, September 6th, 2011. You were there on the opening day.
I was there. That's true.
Good Lord.
2011.
13 and a half years. For most of those years, you were on twice a week.
Yep.
That's, I'm not good at math. That's a lot of times you've been on with us.
Yeah. No, I was trying to sort of suss it out. Like, I don't know if I made it to 1,000, but like, I'm in that neighborhood.
You gotta be. Because, I mean, you were doing 100 times a year for a decade.
Right.
Yeah. Gotta be over 1,000.
I would. Yeah. Like. Yeah. Yeah, roughly right around a third of the episodes I have appeared in some way, shape,
yes,
or form.
Wow. That's great. I feel like you should be getting a cut of, there is no money.
I was going to say, yeah, all that big time, I don't know, air quotes sports talk.
Right. Do you want some books? Because that's what we've got a lot of. I came in yesterday. I had a bookshelf that I brought in. That I foolishly thought that, well, that will organize things. That lasted, I don't know, maybe 2 years before it got filled up. I must have taken 100 books out of here.
Oh, I'm sure.
And there are still piles.
You gave away a bunch a couple,
yes,
of years,
oh,
back.
Yeah. Yep. And I got more. They're everywhere. I mean, it's great.
Yeah. No, that's wonderful. Yeah. Like, I'm going to be here tomorrow, so I'm not going to get into all the happy sappy whatever. But you know, obviously, we all echo what Sean had to say before this. You're pretty good at this, Rich.
Well,
and people enjoy it.
I've been posting about all the guests and everybody who's made it a success. I couldn't do any of this by myself. The guests are always what has made it click, and producers and co-hosts of what. I've done everything to make it sound good. And, you know, my part is to, again, I think I said it to David Roth, tee people up and get the hell out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the simple fact that so many of these people keep coming back, I think that speaks volumes, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm proud of what we've done. But I also tomorrow we're going to have some fun. I don't want to get all gooey and, because we're not done. We're going to move off into podcast world and maybe more, he said teasingly. I'm ready to actually have some afternoons free. The thought,
right,
of,
well,
that,
I mean,
kind,
I was
of gonna, exciting.
I was going to say, when's the last time you had a free afternoon?
Graham has never known me when I had afternoons off.
Wow.
He's used to me picking him up at school, spending about 7 minutes and going, well, see you in a few hours, buddy.
Yep.
So that's going to be fine. I mean, he probably get tired of it in about a week.
Well,
as will Abby, for that matter.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure she's already tired of it, and yeah, hasn't even happened yet.
Yeah, exactly. When are you? Can't you find something else? Isn't Walmart probably have some afternoon openings? You should check with them. Oh, well, how was your weekend?
It was good. We did sort of a late holiday with my sister because, she was a little under the weather on the day. So we did a little something with that. Spent some time doing some cleaning up around the house, getting stuff ready for our New Year's celebration.
Ooh, can't wait.
Mostly just sort of kept it kind of close to home. It was nice, honestly, like to just sort of take it easy a little bit.
Yeah, I'll bet.
That's what the holidays are for.
Darn right. Downtime. It's crucial.
Yeah.
Rolling into a brand spanking new year. Well, good. We're excited to be there on Wednesday. Can't wait.
Yes, sir.
One of our favorite days of the year.
Ours, too.
How many eggs? How many eggs will give their life for this open house on New Year's Day?
Look, I don't know the... I can't give you the total. I will say there are 4 dozen... dedicated specifically to baked French toast.
Oh man!
Like that's what I can tell you off the top, off the dome. But there will be more eggs.
Will there be the candied bacon again this year?
It's a great question. I honestly
wow.
don't know.
Wow,
Christmas night, me and Loretta went to a little bar that we've become, it's called the Friendly Bar. We've become, you know, it's become sort of our regular bar, and they have a big Christmas potluck, and I had perhaps the best bacon I've ever had. So the candied bacon is appealing. This was bacon that had both brown sugar and Lowry seasoning salt.
Oh, giddy up.
So it was sweet and savory and bacony and just, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, we've basically fully changed over at this point. We are very much a Penzies household right now, so get ready for some delicious and progressive spicing of the foods come Wednesday. But yeah, no, it's very exciting. Sheridan has already started. And I will be carrying things where they need to be carried, moving things where they need to be moved, and then generally just doing my best to not be in her way, because I have a tendency to do that.
Is Stella already excited in advance that people will be invading her home?
Yeah, I mean it's the usual. Like she'll bark a bunch at the first, you know, four or five groups that come in, and then she'll just give up because she's like, well, nope, this is happening whether I bark or not. So we'll have the cats confined. We're not entirely sure if we're going to leave them in their room upstairs or if we're going to put them in their little condo downstairs. Not because we think they will have any issues with people, although Vader does get a little bitey sometimes. But it's more that with the in and out, we worry that they would get outside, and then they've never been outside, so I don't know how that would go.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to find out.
I don't. No. I don't. Certainly not when I've got, 50 people in my house.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, let's talk movies. Have you seen anything in the last week?
I did a couple. I went to the Cineplex for a movie, and I watched one at home.
At home,
I tuned into Amazon Prime Video and watched the documentary Chief Saholic. I don't know if you're familiar with this.
I have heard about it, yes.
It is a fascinating little document. And then on the big screen, we went and saw A Complete Unknown, the Bob Dylan biopic starring Timothée Chalamet, the James Mangold movie.
Excellent.
I'm happy to talk about either one in whatever order, however you want to do it.
Let's talk Chief Saholic first.
Yeah, let's do that. I remembered vaguely hearing about this story when it happened. The full title is Chief Saholic, A Wolf in Chief's Clothing. And it's basically this the arc of this guy named Xavier Babadar, who was a Kansas City Chiefs super fan. Like, he was a guy dressed up in a wolf costume, made hype videos, was very active on social media, one of those honestly insufferable types who basically make liking a sports team their entire personality. I'm a sports fan. I do not judge people for fandom, but I also think that there are, there are other things what we learn over the course of this documentary is that our guy Xavier, Chief Saholic, everyone was kind of curious as to how he was able to go to all these away games and go to the playoff games and go to the Super Bowl and all this stuff. And, as it turns out, he was robbing banks.
Yeah.
robbing just a bunch of banks. According to the documentary, all told, he wound up stealing something like $1.1 million over the course of eight or nine different heists.
So he
robberies.
Was fairly good at this.
Anytime you could do it more than once, I think you're doing okay.
Right.
When we meet the guy, because he is on camera, as part of the documentary, we first meet him with his house arrest bracelet in a hotel room where he's watching, I believe it's the not the most recent Chiefs Super Bowl, but the one before, a game which, by the way, he had something $15,000 riding on, both in terms of, I think it was Patrick Mahomes winning the MVP and then the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl, you know, with a potential payoff of $150,000 and just like all this stuff. And just like this dude, just a real piece of work. And feel free to substitute other words for work.
I sense. Yeah, I'm reading between the lines.
Because, just a real, one of those, again, like exactly the sort of person you would expect a super fan to be. Like, and it's just like, and so you're learning about this guy and like, you know, all this weird sort of quasi, you know, persona that he built, like all these things that he would say that weren't, that maybe had a grain of truth or were outright fabrications, you know. And then in the middle of all of it, we meet some of the police officers who were involved in investigating some of the robberies. We meet a bank teller who was at his final robbery. We meet this guy, Michael Lloyd. He's a bail bondsman. And again, exactly the sort of dude you would expect to be a bail bondsman in Kansas City, Missouri. Like, I mean, to the point where, and this is, I mean, again, you shouldn't judge people on their appearance. That's not a fair thing to do. But this dude had straight up like Polly Walnuts hair, like that jet black on top and the bright white on the sides. Nice. And it's like, is that that's gotta be a toupee, right? And this, you know, and this guy's just driving around like thinking he's Dog the Bounty Hunter and just, but we get to watch him sort of, you know, deal with, what happens when, you know, cause you know, he bail bondsman, he put up 80 grand of his own money to, you know, get this guy out. And, well, shockingly, this guy wasn't necessarily interested in sticking around. Anyway.
Wow.
I mean, it's just one of those movies where, like, it was interesting to see because, again, like, I had vague memories of it, but to sort of see all the, like, all the details kind of laid out for you. In such a way, it's a fascinating subject for a documentary. It's like a little, like the runtime's almost 2 hours. It's a little padded out. Like there are a lot of like, dramatic reenactments and stuff like that. And I get it. You want to have that stuff, but they just went to that well a little too often. But again, I think a lot of that comes from the fact that they didn't necessarily have as much footage of the guys. Maybe they thought they were going to, because again, you know, scumbag's gonna scumbag. Like that's just how it's gonna go. But one of the remarkable things about this movie was watching, you know, it's a documentary, so these are all real people, and just about everybody is terrible. Like they're all just real terrible, terrible people. And to see that, and then, you know, sprinkled throughout as far as, you know, part of the talking head brigade, a number of other like big time Kansas City Chiefs fans who were also weird in their own way. I mean, I guess, you know, they're not robbing banks, so I mean, I guess they're okay. But like, you know, like I've never been one for like the, you know, the face painting.
Well, I was gonna say, like, if you had a friend, a close friend who was in their 40s, let's say, who painted their face and went to every game and made a show, wouldn't you have an intervention for that guy?
At a certain point, you're just like, okay, like, I mean, I get it. You love this team, but like, like, I mean, you know, these guys are like, I mean, they're older than I am, you know, like these are guys in their 50s.
Well, and they begin to feel like they are part of the team. Too.
Well, and I think that's one of the sort of underlying messages of this movie is, this dude thought he was untouchable. He thought he was invincible. You know, he had really sort of believed the hype, as they say. And so he felt like he became sort of as much a part of the team as the players,
right,
you know.
Right. Did he learn anything from his conviction?
Absolutely nothing. Like, this guy could not have been more obtuse about the potential lessons learned. Like, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, I mean, I don't have a job, but yeah, I'll go rob banks so I can go to football games and like lose money at casinos. Like that's basically all he did was like buy football tickets and gamble away like illicitly gotten gains. Like it was really something to see that a person like this even exists. And honestly, like you couldn't make it up. Like, if you wrote this in a screenplay, people would be like, oh, I mean, let's dial it back a little bit. Nobody's going to buy this. And it's just that's just who this dude was. Just the worst. That being said, if you are a sports fan, a fan of sports documentaries, and you are at all interested in perhaps the seedier side of fandom, it's a pretty good watch. Ooh. Like, we sat down and we dug it. Like, again, it's not a great movie. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to blow your hair back, but... yeah, it's a perfectly acceptable way to pass some time.
You know, it made me think of, I went down a rabbit hole last week and watched, and it's a docuseries, not a pure documentary, but have you seen It's All in the Game, the docuseries about Madden football?
I have not. I want to very much.
Very
because,
good.
Because I, like, that whole story is fascinating, yeah. And... like, I'm always going to love the fact that Madden thought it was just dumb, but was like, okay, like, let's do this. And then he, you know, and then, of course, it became arguably the greatest sports video game of all time.
And then his approach was, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right.
Yep.
You know, when they started, they had, because of the limits of technology and everything at the time, they had 7 players on a team. And Madden said, what the hell is this? Yeah. This is not football. If you can't do it with 11 on a side, I'm out.
Yep.
But check that out. It's really, really good.
Bless his heart.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Timothy Chalamet channeling some aspect of Bob Dylan.
Okay. So here's what we'll start with this. So this is kind of my favorite sort of subgenre of musical biopic in that it's very much a slice.
Right. Right.
We start in 1961 with young Bob Dylan, again played by Timothy Chalamet, landing in New York City. And it ends with, spoiler alert, I guess, but it ends with the historic performance in 1965 at the Newport Folk Festival. Dylan Goes Electric.
And we've had on, is it Elliot Wald who wrote the book? He's been on the show talking about his book, Dylan Goes Electric.
Yeah. And James Mangold co-wrote the adaptation of the screenplay. He directed the film, maybe best known for Walk the Line.
Right.
He's no stranger to this kind of movie. So I'm going to just get this out of the way right now. I walked out of there and I was so mad at Timothy Chalamet because he's so GD good in this movie. Yeah. He is excellent. I mean, and it's like, and it's one of those... oh, and it's like, and he's so young, and it's just like, it's so frustrating when someone that young is able to do stuff like this. But like, he captured Dylan without doing a caricature,
right?
Like, it's like,
it's not purely an impression.
It's right. It's very much, but it's, I mean, he's got the vocal cadence. He sounds like him when he sings, like the music is uncanny in places where it's just like, oh yeah, so you really went for this.
Well, the other guy, by the way, who looks great and sounds great in the clips is Edward Norton as Pete Seeger.
I'm a long time Edward Norton fan. It's been a long time since I saw him be this good in something. Like, he is great as Pete Seeger. But yeah, it's you know, and there are a couple of, like, it's, I mean, they do a lot of the same sort of, like, the biopic tricks. Like, there are a couple of, like, amalgam characters and things like that. But yeah, like, you've got, you know, I mentioned Chalamet, you mentioned Norton, Elle Fanning is in this. She's very good. Monica Barbaro is phenomenal as Joan Baez, like, amazing. And then you've got like some smaller roles, like Dan Fogler's in this as a very sort of skeezy agent, but he's wonderful. Boyd Holbrook as Johnny Cash is like, I mean, he's not in the movie very much, but it is, again, one of those things where it's like I don't know what, But it was the same sort of thing with Walk the Line. Like, Mangold has this knack of getting actors to capture the essence of these people without ever feeling like, you know, it's like a Saturday Night Live impression or something like that. It all feels very real. But yeah, we meet young Bobby Dylan as he shows up in New York City. He's come to the city because he wants to pay his respects to Woody Guthrie, who is hospitalized. That's Scoot McNairy in a very challenging role because it's, you know, this is when Guthrie was basically locked in, you know, like he couldn't speak really, like he couldn't really communicate. So he's come to pay his respects, and he goes to the hospital, and wouldn't you know it, Woody Guthrie's very good friend Pete Seeger is there. You know, he's got his guitar, and they're like, "Oh, well, you came all this way. Why don't you play a song for us?" And he takes out the guitar and plays a song, and you know, that sort of the light goes on in the eyes, and then you see as Pete Seeger kind of becomes Dylan's champion in like the sort of Greenwich Village folk music scene. You know, he makes, you know, he has his relationships. There's a woman named Sylvie. She's one of the amalgam characters, but that's Elle Fanning. And, you know, and we get to see like these little moments of like, oh, like the photo shoot for the, for that iconic cover, the two of them in the snow,
and
like
Freewheeling Bob Dylan.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So we get to see that sort of stuff. And all the while we get to watch as, you know, these songs are sort of brought to life. And one of the things that is a big pet peeve of mine when it comes to movies like this is like, I don't want it sanitized. I don't want it sugar-coated. Like, I want warts and all. Like Dylan, especially young Dylan, was kind of a jerk, and
particularly to women.
And this movie does not shy away from that at all. Like, it's just like, it's like, oh yeah, like he was, you know, he was this amazing talent who was also, I don't know, like emotionally stunted, I guess you could say. Like, that's probably being generous to him, because the way he treated people around him. You mentioned women, but even like the deterioration of his relationship with Pete Seeger is due to his own hubris, like his own ego sort of expanding. But all the while we're watching, like, as you know, his songwriting evolves, and like his ideas about what music is evolve, his relationship to the people who listen to his music, we watch that evolve. The absolutely toxic relationship between him and Joan Baez is just like front and center, and all of these pieces are coming together, and it's funny because he's been around for so long, it's easy to forget like how kind of meteoric his rise was at the beginning. Like, I mean, he just like, it's like he sort of sprung forth fully formed from the head of whatever folk music god. And so you get to see, like, from these early days of him, like, sleeping on Pete Seeger's couch because he's got nowhere else to go, like, sort of basically maintaining relationships with women so he has a bed to sleep in, to, you know, just a couple of years later, like, having to flee groupies whenever he gets spotted in, you know, in a bar somewhere or a club. And it's just watching that dynamic evolve and watching him sort of struggle with the realities of that, you know, sort of juxtaposed with when it's just him and a guitar, and it's like, and it's really just, and it's really him, and it's really him playing the guitar. Like, it's just, I was, again, like I used coarse language coming out of the theater, and I'm like, man, Timothy Chalamet, F that guy.
Because what is he, 28, 29 years old?
Like, how dare he?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, but I mean, he was so, so good. And like, it was a marvelous supporting cast, like just phenomenal performances from everybody. And again, it was, you know, this is a 2.5 hour movie that felt, I don't know, like I was shocked. I was shocked by like what time it was when I got out of there. Because again, it's like, It is. It's very detailed. It's very, very in depth
and pretty music heavy, from what I understand.
Extremely so. Like more, far, far more musical than I was anticipating, in a good way. Because again, like it's the sort of thing where, like, I mean, it just boils down to having someone in the driver's seat who can make it work. And like he really, like Chalamet really made it work. And again, credit to James Mangold, because he obviously knows how to make this happen. First of all, 60 set period piece. Like I'm always going to dig that. And I learned this, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but the costume designer, same person who designed Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. You know what I mean? It's just this wonderful team of people who've clearly committed to recreating this very specific moment in time. Because again, we're looking at that, we're leaving the 50s behind, but we're not to the summer of love yet.
Right.
You know, Woodstock hasn't happened. Like rock and roll is still very much in its embryonic stages. And so you're in this kind of transition period where it looked like for a minute, like maybe folk music was going to be the thing. And so, you know, that's, you know, for him to start in that place and to just like expand in such a weird and shaggy kind of way into, you know, the songs that, we all know and love. I will say, and this was funny, there was a woman of a certain age sitting next to me, I was delighted by how delighted she was. She clearly had favorite songs that she was very excited to hear, and whenever they would start, her fist would pump, and it's just like, I'm like, oh man, you are super into this. Just as a side note, we entered the theater on Saturday afternoon, the person taking the tickets was like, oh, just so you know, you are definitely the youngest people who are going to be in that room.
Wow.
Which, you know, I mean, fair enough.
Yeah.
Like, but again, I was, like, I figured it was going to be good. Like, I'd heard good things. I did not expect it to be great.
And is it kind of ambiguous and leaving it up to you to decide whether you like this obviously talented character?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. You're like, you're not being steered, really. Good. Like, it's like you're getting to see not only how he behaves and the sort of some of the negativity around that, but you also get to see like how people react to that behavior in what feels like a fairly genuine and honest way. So it's not like, oh yeah, let's everybody isn't Bob Dylan the greatest? It's like, yes, this was just a generational talent who also had plenty of issues to deal with, whether it's his own ego or what have you. So yeah, again, a phenomenal movie going experience. If you're a Bob Dylan fan, you should go see it. And if you're someone like me who gets resentful towards young people being far too talented, I'd say steer clear, because Timothy Chalamet is just going to make you mad. Chalamet, Norton, Fanning, Holbrook, like just a phenomenal cast. Everyone's doing a phenomenal job. And it's the sort of thing where I'm like, there's part of me that's like, do I want to see it again? And I kind of do. And that's, I don't. We'll just say it's relatively rare for me to come out of a movie a first viewing of a movie and immediately be like, yeah, I would watch that again.
Nice.
And you know what? I would watch this again.
Alan Adams sharing his thoughts on A Complete Unknown. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
See you tomorrow for the last roundup.
Oh, you better believe it.
Oh, boy.